Hello and welcome to the Manager Mojo Show. Steve Caldwell here, and we're so glad that you're here. We use our mojo to really become greater leaders. Now, let's get started by listening to something good. Oh, I feel good. I knew that. Want to make 2017 your best year ever? Then let me be your teacher, your mentor. I've prepared special courses and webinars for you that will help you succeed and to give you access directly to me. Go to mojouniversity.com and sign up today. You have nothing to lose. Try me for 30 days, and if you aren't satisfied, I guarantee you a full refund, no questions asked. Don't go it alone. Let me be your guide at mojouniversity.com. Be successful today. Oh, I feel good. I knew that I would not. I feel good. I knew that I would not. So good, so good. I got you. Hello and welcome everyone to the Manager Mojo Show. Steve Caldwell here, and I'm thrilled to introduce our special guest, Maureen Metcalf. Now, Maureen is founder, CEO, and board chair of Metcalf & Associates, and she's a highly sought-after expert in anticipating and leveraging future business trends in order to transform organizations. She's also the host of Voice America, an international radio show focusing on innovative leadership, and she's the author of an award-winning book series on innovative leadership, including the Innovative Leader's Guide to Transforming Organization. In addition to that, she wasn't busy enough. She also writes for Forbes.com, and it is my pleasure to introduce her. Maureen, welcome to the Manager Mojo Show.
Steve, thank you for including me. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, we're thrilled to have you, and I look forward to discussing leadership with you today. But before we jump off into that, why don't you share with our listeners what fun thing that you've been up to lately outside of work?
You know, I live in Ohio, and we have had unseasonably warm weather, and I am an outdoor person, so I have been outside every possible minute I can be, including until about 5 minutes ago. I kind of snuck out to walk. So my yard is clean. I realize that lots of people don't consider that fun, but...
It is if you live in Ohio and you usually get bad weather.
Yeah, I'm watching, I mean, not sitting here watching, but the plants are already coming up, and it's February, so this has been just an amazingly pleasant winter, which makes my life a whole lot better.
Oh, very cool. Now, share with our listeners what part of Ohio that you live in.
I'm in Columbus.
In Columbus, home of Ohio State University.
Yes, in fact, I teach as an adjunct there on occasion.
Oh, very cool. Well, we're glad that you joined us today, and we look forward to chatting with you about leadership. And as we begin, you write about something called innovative leadership. And if you don't mind, I'd like for you to kind of set the stage and help our listeners understand what you mean by innovative leadership.
Sure, thank you. So this started for me when I was implementing computer systems and worked with an organization that was exceptional at putting systems in, but the mindset of the leader was pretty traditional. And by the time we got done with the project, which was a successful project, all but one of the leaders in the organization, it was a division, but it was a billion-dollar division, all but one were gone. And what occurred to me as I watched that group was lots of people come in, they're incredibly talented, and they're dedicated. So they focus on delivering the results and innovating the products of the company, but they fail to innovate themselves. So what we as leaders deliver is us, and how we deliver us enables us to deliver products. And so if I am depreciating in my leadership abilities, at some point it's going to be really hard to deliver the results my organization is paying me to deliver. And what's even more painful to watch from the outside is people who've worked so hard, as they exit these roles, they're not able to quickly step into new roles because they're out of date. And these are, again, people who've worked really hard. And so I talk about, you know, we innovate our technology. Most of your listeners probably don't have flip phones. They have a mobile. They probably don't even have BlackBerries. They've got a relatively new either iPhone or Android. And we're kind of proud of the fact that we're current. And yet, if I were to look at their behaviors, would they themselves seem as current as leaders as their phones seem? So that's kind of probably a way too long answer to say it is foundationally important for leaders to stay current so that they can continue to be successful and so the organizations can deliver on the important missions and visions that they've set forth.
Well, good point, and I get it, but I'm also thinking that as I'm listening to you here, that when you were talking about those that didn't innovate and found themselves being obsolete, why don't, maybe it's easier if you just give us a description of what an obsolete leader looks like.
Yeah. An example, so the Gallup folks talk about having a best friend at work, and my definition of that is someone who has your best interest at heart, who gives you honest and accurate feedback. When they see you make a mistake, they will help you understand. So I'm not talking about people who sit around and chat all day. So just to clarify terminology. So Gallup says that the chance of being engaged is something like 8% if you don't have a best friend at work. It's low. And yet I worked with a client who, when he heard people laughing in the office, equated it to stealing. If they're laughing, they're obviously not working, and therefore they're unproductive. So this was a workforce that was discouraged from doing the very thing that Gallup talks about in having those trusted professional friends in the office.
Well, my way of saying that is that that leader turned work into a true four-letter word.
Yeah. And again, this is a good man who is trying to enforce what he thought his workforce should do, but he was 40 years out of date.
It's amazing at how many people, though, they get up every day and they go to work and they're miserable, so they believe that that's what work is supposed to be, and therefore everybody else should be miserable.
You know, I agree that there are some people that way, and there are some people whose views are just outdated. They're leading like they did when they were young folks coming up. So I'm not that old. I'm certainly not a dinosaur. But what was the prevailing approach to leadership when I started working in the 80s isn't now. So if I lead like I did back then, what I'm doing is not going to be effective, especially now with a workforce that is mostly knowledge-based, right? Way less structured and process-oriented than we were 20 or 30 years ago.
Well, there's no question that the availability of computers and email to everybody and so many teams working virtually has changed the dynamic in companies. Give me one other example of somebody that's just totally out of touch.
Well, so you talk about people working remotely. I've worked with other clients who, if you're not sitting in the office and they can't see you, they assume you're not working. And yet much of our workforce is contingent. We've got more of our mid-level force that has both kids and aging parents. And so, and they're paid to do work that doesn't require their fanny to be in a desk in front of their boss, right? So a lot of their work can be done remotely, and by giving them just a bit of freedom so that they can navigate the challenges of kids get sick, parents get sick, and the level of stress subsequently goes up dramatically. And I work with a young man right now, and my guidance to him is, go home and have dinner with your kids and then log on. Seems so simple. And yet, if he has a boss who wants him there until 7 or 8 at night when his kids are now going to bed, he is consistently feeling guilty and consequently less committed.
Well, eventually he'll just look for somewhere else to go.
Yeah, he will. And he's one of the best and brightest of his peer group.
Mm-hmm.
So it won't be hard for him to find someplace else.
So give us an example, maybe, of innovating ourselves. I mean, how are we going to change this? Because it seems to me that for most people, it's about control. They want to control everything around them, and they want to control everybody. And therefore, it becomes really difficult for them to really make adjustments to what I would call the new world. So give us some examples of people that are doing it really well, and what do they look like?
What do they look like? We built a competency model, and when I say we, it's my colleagues, Mike Morrow Fox, Susan Cannon, and myself, that looks at basically, if you know Jim Collins' Good to Great, the idea of level five leadership. So the question is, what do those behaviors look like? And how do people emulate them? So basically, we've done the work of doing the research, and we're now trying to help people be aware of what these things look like in a way that they don't actually have to go out and do it.
Mm-hmm. Sounds very interesting. So how about an example? What would one thing that you're doing look like that would give people hope that maybe they're on the right track?
You know, there are a couple things. Let me start with collaboration. So the idea of innately collaborative. So in an era right now that is so charged with points of view, right, with the recent political election and people being on differing sides, and it seems that we've lost the ability to respect alternate points of view and synthesize them to create a better outcome.
Good point. There would be those that would say that there are so many people who really are not interested in trying to collaborate. They just want you to do what they want them to do.
There are lots of those people out there.
And I see these people failing every day in leadership and management positions all over the world. They simply don't know how to build any kind of consensus, even in their own organization.
Well, and, you know, again, as we think about the rate of change that we're facing right now that is just unprecedented, right, and it's not going to get any slower, that as a leader now, where I used to be able to identify a change, we only had one going on at a time, maybe two, and plan the change and then implement it in an orderly fashion, now we've got multiple changes all the time. They step on each other. About the time I figure out one direction, something else changes. And so now leaders are less, the most effective leaders are less command and control, and more they work like a scientist, that I am paying attention to everything. I integrate those points of view from people that I never used to even care about what they thought about, because my company was vertically integrated and I had everything I needed. Now I'm working with a bunch of external contractors and vendors and suppliers and partners. So now that ability to collaborate and build agreement across a diverse platform of people has really accelerated. And then I am implementing change with that diverse group, again, that I don't control. So my human skills have to go way up.
Absolutely. I think that's a key, isn't it, that you do have to have those human behavioral skills that say I'm willing to look for alternative ways of doing things.
It to me, it's a requirement, and yet I also have to acknowledge that for many of us, it's terribly uncomfortable to admit that we don't know what we're doing. And that's where this kind of mind of a scientist comes in. Mm-hmm. It's not that I know nothing. It's that I don't have the answer, so I am going to work with the smartest people I can get my hands on, and come up with a hypothesis that moves us in the right direction, and we start moving quickly. So this is where we kind of draw in from the agile or nimble organization, that one small step forward and test and measure, and then one more small step forward. And I realize that doesn't work for everything. If you're building a building, you kind of need to know where it goes. But for many things that we do, consistent small steps really put us ahead of the game.
Oh, no question. I personally agree with you. I think that small steps of change are even more tolerable to a lot of people to take. You know, as we were talking about this, I couldn't help but think about what a dinosaur really does look like in the leadership world. And it's the phrase that I heard many, many years ago all the time. I still hear it. And when I do, I cringe. It is that, well, we've always done it this way.
Yep. The other is, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Mm-hmm.
In this era, that may have worked when I started working. I don't think that's true anymore.
I don't think it ever worked myself, but, you know, I'm sure there were some examples out there where it did. But to me, it was all the crutch of it's easier to kind of order everybody around when you have the authority and the position than it is really to get down, as you say, and look at it like a scientist and look at different points of view and make tweaks and changes and be comfortable that it may not be perfect.
At this point, very little is going to be perfect, but directionally correct and moving forward seems like the name of the game.
One of the biggest, I guess, questions and conversations that I hear people talking about today that may you may can offer some guidance in is that, as you know, we now have multiple generations in the workplace. And it causes a lot of frustration to all levels, whether they're the young individual that's managing people much, much older, or vice versa. And so I happen to believe what you're talking about can help them in that area. So would you mind kind of addressing it from that perspective?
Sure. You know, one of the things that I find fascinating is people talk about our young millennials. They want to come in and they want to make changes right away and they want to be in charge. I wanted to be in charge too. I'm not sure that they are in some ways that much different. In other ways, they are. And I'm working with several people who are quite young and amazingly talented. So part of it is we meet them and they meet us. So I can't say, come to my office, do what I say, and suck it up, and when you get old enough, you'll be in charge like I am. This is not going to work. I also don't necessarily need to put a foosball table in the middle of my room. But creating a workplace where people can do work that's meaningful, where we treat them with respect, where that we give them opportunities to grow and develop, and acknowledge that certainly there are differences between a 22-year-old now and when I was 22. But there are ways to move it forward, and again, they're messy, right? Because your 22-year-olds may be different than mine, and no two are alike. But if we collaborate effectively and we attend to meeting the mission, I think that's the other thing, is we're always focusing on meeting the mission, delivering for our clients, creating great opportunities where we can for our team. And not everything I am going to do is going to be exciting. I own the company and I do a lot of stuff that's not exciting. And yet I try to create as many opportunities as possible to do the stuff we love. Does that answer?
I think it does. I think it helps, is that we have to be open to everybody's perspective. And just to also reflect on your statement that, you know, when you were in your 20s, you wanted to be in charge. I totally get that. When I was in my teens, I wanted to be in charge. So it never changed, as a matter of fact. I mean, I get it. But the fact is, innovation can often happen from looking at these new points of view. And unfortunately, I think too many of us take the easy way out. we don't really study what other people are saying. In other words, we haven't learned how to listen yet. And that kind of leads me to, you know, some of the things that an innovative leader might do. What are some of those things that you think, maybe the top two or three or four things that you believe an innovative leader does all the time?
So let me go back to the competency model. One is this unwavering commitment to right action. So I keep coming back to, I pay attention to the mission of the organization, and I also pay attention to my values. So if my values are things like ethics and being inclusive and treating people fairly, I'm going to focus on delivering impeccably while living my values. I think that level of authenticity, I know what I stand for, people around me know what I stand for, and I do it. I don't just talk about it. I do it every day. And if someone calls me on it, I can answer, and rarely do I violate those values. And now I'm always balancing what do my employees want versus what do my clients want versus what's right for the environment. So not everyone can look at everything I do and point to it, but pretty darn close. So I think that kind of authenticity, commitment to my values. And one of the other ones that I like to talk about is this idea of being intellectually versatile, or I'm sorry, 360-degree thinker, that I understand how my organization works and how we fit within our industry and our clients' industries. And when we make changes, that I understand the ripple effect. I think as leaders, we get in trouble when we go too far down a path without examining the larger consequences and longer-term consequences. So what I would fondly call whack-a-mole management. Mm-hmm. I smack one of those moles and six others pop up. It takes longer to be more deliberate, and yet, you know, I look at some leaders and they get awards for solving problems. Unfortunately, these are also the problems they caused.
It does happen quite often, doesn't it?
But they're brilliant at putting out those fires. If you look around their desk, you can see where they dropped all the matches and stuff scored.
Yeah, you know, that's my least favorite style of leadership. It's what I call the fireman method. Because, frankly, nobody ever gets anything done. Nobody ever gets any better. Not necessarily anything any of us should emulate anyway. When you talk about, you know, kind of checking as we go, that leads me to measurement and accountability. And I think that a lot of people really struggle with accountability in their organizations and in particular with their teams. So what would be your thoughts about how to actually hold people accountable and in such a way that you still can be collaborative?
Yeah, one, I'm a big fan of accountability and respect. So I do a lot of work with developmental psychology and those levels of development or levels of maturity. So again, think back to Collins and the different levels. And so how I hold someone accountable who is a level 5 leader is going to look very different than how I hold someone accountable who's new in the workforce, right? So if you're new in the workforce, I'm going to set a goal, and I'm going to check in pretty regularly to make sure you're on track. Once you've proven yourself, I'll check in a whole lot less. And it's not micromanaging. It's my job to make sure you're on track and you've got what you need first couple of times. Once you've done that, I am out of your way, and you're going to do it, and I'm going to trust you, and I'll check in on occasion, and I'll be available. So I think the idea of accountability is kind of a sliding scale, and once we've demonstrated our ability, then what I check in on is much less detailed. I just want to make sure that I'm taking the barriers out of the way.
Makes total sense.
Ultimately, at the end of the day, our credibility as a professional organization is on the line, and if we don't deliver, all of us fail. So I still think it's my job to verify enough in advance that we can correct.
Great point. A great point. I think we all can learn from using that sliding scale that you mentioned with accountability. Maureen, I know that people are going to want to find out more about the work that you do. Why don't you share how they can connect with you?
Sure. Thank you. So the website is www.metcalf-associates.com. And one of the things I've really tried to do is put a lot of resources on the site that are free of charge. So there's an innovative leadership assessment. There's a resilience assessment. And I do ask for your email address, and I send out a quarterly newsletter. So I am not going to be tracking people down. The other is under the publications tab. There are several free articles, again, trying to make my work accessible, and lots of people aren't going to hire me as a consultant, but they can read a free article. There are books and workbooks. If you look at on the website, there's a picture of the book. You can click on that. And also the Voice America interview series, again, free. People can listen to those as podcasts after they listen to yours, of course. So,
thank you for saying that. That was nice. But no, that's there's tons of good information on your site, and I encourage those of you, if you're interested in Maureen's work, please make sure you go check out her website. And if you happen to be exercising right now, we'll make it very easy for you as usual. There will be a link directly in the post to take you directly to Maureen's website. I think we all can learn from one another, and certainly Maureen is an expert in this field. So Maureen, as we go to close today, I like to hear what your best two or three action items that you would like for managers and leaders to take. What are those top two or three things that you would like to recommend that they begin to do so they can move in the right direction starting today?
Yeah, if they aren't doing it already, have a sense of personal purpose. Who am I and where am I going? So that's vision and values. Am I acting authentically given who I am and what I care about? Know my strengths and weaknesses, and this is an ongoing process. Understand my strengths and weaknesses to accomplish what is in my vision, and then have a development plan that is moving me in that direction. And my assumption is people who are listening to your show are already development-oriented. So continue the focus on your own professional development and stay healthy.
Oh, great point. Oh, great points. That's outstanding. I think we all should do every one of those things. Maureen, I want to thank you today for sharing your wisdom with us. Our guest has been Maureen Metcalf. She's a founder, CEO, and board chair of Metcalf and Associates. She also is host of her own radio show on Voice America and an author. So she's trying to help us learn how to be innovative leaders. And so, Maureen, thank you so very much for your time today. And we wish you continued success in everything that you do.
Thank you so much, Steve. It's really an honor to be included on your show.
Oh, our pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Want to make 2017 your best year ever? Then let me be your teacher, your mentor. I've prepared special courses and webinars for you that will help you succeed and to give you access directly to me. Go to mojouniversity.com and sign up today. You have nothing to lose. Try me for 30 days, and if you aren't satisfied, I guarantee you a full refund, no questions asked. Don't go it alone. Let me be your guide at mojouniversity.com. Be successful today.